Hey, everybody, this is Tony at Large. Tune in to the Eclectomaniac radio show for a fun, sexy mix of new hits, throwbacks, and remixes. Third Wednesday of the month from 7 to 9:30 p.m. only on WGXC 90.7 FM, Accra. Love is the answer. Tune in.
WGXC underwriting support is provided by Art Omai's Light Into Night, an annual benefit auction, 6:30 p.m. Saturday, September 15th at the Studio Barns of Art Omai in Ghent, New York. Featuring a rustic food hall style meal presented by the Flammery of Kinderhook and Oak Pizzeria Napolitana of Hudson, plus avant-garde happenings and innovative performances by Art Omai alumni and friends. Light Into Night also includes a silent auction throughout the evening, as well as live auctions featuring vacation destinations and monotypes by Art Omai alumni. For children, the Little Stars Party offers art making, a campfire, singing, storytelling, and more. Information at 501auctions.com/artomai or at artomai.org.
The views and opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily those of WGXC or Wavefarm.
I like marijuana, you like marijuana, we like marijuana too. Marijuana, 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 marijuana. I like marijuana, but you like marijuana, we like marijuana too. I want to be a hippie, got to get stoned on marijuana. Be a runaway, got to leave home for marijuana. Remember the teeny bop sniffing airplane glue? Marijuana. He used to freak out in Central Park Zoo. Marijuana. I want to get high, but I never know why. Here comes the cop, I got to say goodbye for on the lower east side for marijuana. I want to be a pusher, got to get you high on marijuana. It's my life and I do what I want. Marijuana. It's my life and I do what I can't. Marijuana. I want to smoke pot and I want to smoke a lot. My father, the marijuana cop. Marijuana. I like marijuana, but you like marijuana. We like marijuana too. Marijuana.
Hello, Radioland. This is Heather Martin, and you are listening to the Medical Freedom Show. We broadcast to you the second Monday of every month, 2 to 3 p.m. Today, I am joined by a special guest, Charles D. Frohman.
Hello, Heather. How are you?
Doing well, thanks. And hear you loud and clear. Looks like we have a good connection to start out with today.
That's always good and always a risk with Skype, that's for sure.
That it is. So, Charles is a lobbyist and an activist for freedom, for medical freedom and other kinds of freedom. And today we're going to talk a bit about the life and legacy of chronic pain activist and medical freedom activist Siobhan Reynolds, who Charles has had the opportunity to work with.
Exactly, Heather. And Siobhan Reynolds deserves some remembrance because anyone involved in the pain, the War on Pain doctors and War on Pain patients issues will know her name and what a great job she did a decade or so ago. And the issue hasn't gotten any better.
No, so it hasn't. She's a personal hero of mine because I got into being a chronic pain and medical freedom activist really in a similar way as what happened to her. She had a husband who was chronically ill, and she was really horrified at the treatment he was getting, going to doctors who were treating him like a criminal. And I'm the partner and caregiver for a chronic pain patient, and I have seen the same things. One thing I want to point out is she started her activism around 2003. And her husband, he died in 2006. And she died in a tragic plane accident in 2011. And just want to say, though, that during that time period, 2006, 2003, you know, those almost seem like the good old days compared to what we have now.
It has gotten worse.
Yeah.
I was doing some major reading to do some homework to prepare for this interview because I want to honor this opportunity here to talk about the issue and where we are. And there was a lot of studies and openness from folks to realize that when you titrate to effect patients on what pain medicine they need, the doctors and experts were saying they needed more. So there was more prescribing, even while at the same time a lot of doctors were going to jail.
Right.
And I saw some of them go to jail in federal court. I met lots of them who were casualties of that war. But there was a lot of activism. But over the past 10 years, since I've been somewhat out of the issue, diversifying into other areas, I've read that prescribing has gone down. So the pain patients are in worse shape this past decade than they were in that decade you're referring to.
When during that time, just to kind of recap my own experience, my partner did go through some difficulty finding a doctor to prescribe and treat, but at the time it was really just a matter of getting a good private doctor who really understood the medicine and who would treat it and to try to stay out of the pain clinics. And he got in with a good doctor, well, a doctor who was knowledgeable about the pain medicine and who prescribed enough. And when he had enough pain medicine, like he was able to pursue his hobbies in photography and gardening, we were able to have a social life. And when they started cutting back the medicine, it was really after that first batch of DEA guidelines came out around 2012, 2013, and the quality of life since then has been fractional.
And it was around 2006, 2007, 2008, I don't know the specific months or years, where I was paid by Siobhan's group, the Pain Relief Organization, to connect her to politicians and other decision makers and thought leaders in healthcare to sort of really get organized on this issue. Mm-hmm. And for her, I did attend one of those meetings at the Drug Enforcement Administration in Northern Virginia. I was living in Capitol Hill. I was a lobbyist. I metroed over there across the Potomac River. And I went into this building, which is like, oh my gosh, why am I going into this awful bureaucracy that shouldn't exist? And I went into the amphitheater, and there was the, you know, the big, burly, mustachioed DEA expert speaking. He had ruddy cheeks and looked like he was a drunk on alcohol, which is just so typical. Yeah, all these drug warriors, oh, they love their liquor, but, you know, not, you know, natural drugs or pain or opioids that have been around for thousands mm-hmm. of years that actually have a purpose and work. Right. Anyways, go ahead. So you're talking about the DEA rules that came out mm-hmm. after that event I attended, and I saw this Orwellian show mm-hmm. with all these experts in the audience and special interests that were gaming the system, and I had a real bad taste in my mouth yeah. then. So it's sad to hear you say that the guidelines they came out with were as bad as I thought they would be.
Mm-hmm. Well, we certainly experienced some pretty bad things during that era, one being the local pain clinic that insisted upon the epidural steroid injections with the promise of just take this injection. If it doesn't work, then you'll get pain medicine. Oh, it didn't work. Well, let's do another injection. Then you'll get pain medicine. On and on and on till it was pretty obvious that it was just infinite injections with no actual pain medicine coming. And that's when my partner was fortunate enough to find a private doctor through personal recommendation. But that doctor has since had to go out of practice because simply dealing with the government regulations and trying to be a practitioner have just gotten entirely too scary.
Yeah, I met them, Frank Fisher, Alex DeLuca, another doctor whose name I forget, his wife is a Christian coalition lobbyist, so nothing mm-hmm. immoral about that guy, except he went to jail.
Yeah.
And you know, these doctors have these undercover DEA agents come in and lie about their pain, and the poor doctor is practicing the art, pain medicine, mm-hmm. where it's a combination of science and art. Well, isn't that what medicine is supposed to be?
Mm-hmm. Because every human is so unique. Not everybody right. is going to respond to a given medicine the same way, a given treatment. We don't even respond the same way to food.
Exactly.
Some people eat peanuts like they're going out of style, and some people might die if they kiss someone who ate them. So, you know, are peanuts poisonous to the human species?
That brings up a whole new can of worms. How mm-hmm. do those peanut allergies come about?
allergy is simply a unique way of reacting to a given substance, and without calling them allergies or calling them just reaction differences, people react differently to different medicines. Like an opiate, some people can function on less. Some people need way more. And you can't make a blanket rule when it comes to medicine, because there's always going to be outliers. There's always going to be people who don't react the same as everybody else.
That's right. And Siobhan, when she and I would talk to staffers on Capitol Hill in the late 2000s, you know, that would be sort of an eye-opening experience for staffers to hear that, well, you may need a lot of opioids. They've mm-hmm. been around for the poppy plant for thousands of years, going back to Egypt, and if your spine isn't releasing enough endorphins to control your pain, well, you need to have a supplement from the poppy plant medicine. It's natural. It's been put together by pharma and a couple of medicines like Percocet or Vicodin, mm-hmm. but mostly, you know, it's the poppy plant, and you might need a lot of it for a long time.
Yep.
And these are professionals that are, you know, able to, like you mentioned with your husband, garden or go to the office, but they need that extended opioid for a long period of time so they could add value to society.
Mm-hmm.
And instead, at the doctor's office, they're getting those epidurals, or they're getting NSAIDs, you know, non-steroidal.
Which can cause so many other complicating problems.
The
adhesive anacarditis, the liver damage from the NSAIDs.
Right.
I just want to recap a little bit about the decade in which Siobhan Reynolds was active that some people were really starting to suffer in that decade, like some people who might have been caught in like our local system of the forced steroid injections. We've met some people who have been injured by that process. And I want to also say that it's a very hard time for people who are minorities, because before everybody was treated like a criminal, they would be treated like criminals going in. So, you know, I've talked to people like sickle cell activists, Nita Thompson, and, you know, another great activist in our movement has recently passed away. You know, I started out thinking of the show as a tribute to Siobhan Reynolds, and it is, but just very recently, Dr. Reverend Ronald Myers, who's been a guest on my show several times, he just passed away, and he's a doctor who has been persecuted for prescribing pain medicine. He's been a very active activist. He's with the National Pain Patients Coalition. He actually nominated me to the position of secretary of the National Pain Patients Coalition, which I still am. And he had just gotten a congressional briefing in Washington, D.C. through the efforts of the last National Pain Patients Coalition Advocacy Week, Chronic Pain Patients Advocacy Week. And so, you know, there's another tremendous loss to the chronic pain community, to the medical freedom activist community. So, and he also worked with Siobhan Reynolds back then. So I want to ask you, how did you get to know her? And for our listeners, I'm talking right now with Charles D. Frohman. I am Heather Martin of the Medical Freedom Show. My guest is lobbyist and activist Charles D. Frohman. So how did you get to know Siobhan Reynolds?
Well, I got to know her through a friend who knew her, Michael Osterlink, I think, from the Liberty Coalition. And I was just hustling for small nonprofit clients. I am a libertarian out of the worked at the Cato Institute, where I was a government affairs associate director, and before that I was a lobbyist for a bunch of financial trade associations. And I was a congressional staffer in the 90s before that, where I was stuck with the healthcare issue back when Hillary tried to have the government take over the market way back when, and I got involved with all these different healthcare issues. So I was the lobbyist for a natural health organization and a consumer choice nonprofits. So Siobhan was looking for affordable help, and I had the right mix of price and experience she was looking for. And we just started meeting with staffers on the Hill. And you mentioned Advocacy Week and a pain briefing. I have to say that raises another memory with Siobhan. Also as frustrating as my attendance at that DEA event. And it was one of those bigger, larger pain groups that wasn't so interested in, you may have found this too, Heather, in advocacy for the rights of pain doctors to do their job and for pain patients to get their medicine.
Yes.
Instead, they were looking for funding for studies. And and I want to make another comment about the epidural and the NSAIDs. You know, big pharma, sometimes they complain about the attack on OxyContin, and other times I wonder if they don't benefit from some of the shenanigans that real pain doctors have to face so they can sell some patentable NSAIDs. Or, you know, who's behind the drug war? Because, you know, back when I was active with Siobhan, it was a lot of rural communities that were hit hard by not just opioids. As Dr. Coburn would say in the Senate committee hearings, this is polydrug abuse. They're misusing legal good medicine and mixing with alcohol in many cases. Now, a lot of the pain patients are going to heroin and fentanyl synthetics, and that's hitting
because they have no choice.
Right, they have no choice because they need their. They're not getting the relief from their doctor or pharmacy, so they're going to the street.
Yeah, the other alternative, suicide. Who wants that? And the suicide number just keeps going up. And, of course, when chronic pain patients commit suicide, it goes under an opioid death.
Exactly. And so they mix addiction with dependency and the fentanyl deaths with opioids. The media reporting on this is awful.
Mm-hmm.
And they're not separating the illegal drug problem that does involve a lot of people with long-term addiction problems with this huge pain patient market that doesn't involve people with a history of abuse.
Mm-hmm.
And it's unfortunate because pain patients are suffering and those involved with street deaths are suffering.
Mm-hmm.
And the docs are scared. And, you know, we haven't mentioned this, but the politics is getting worse.
You know, you ask why. I think really a big part of the reason why is that our country and our municipalities have become financially dependent on there being a drug war. So nationwide, there is more of a movement now towards legalizing cannabis or at least allowing medical cannabis. And since that aspect of the drug war can really no longer be upheld so well, there's just so much information that's gotten through about how safe and beneficial that substance is, that the systems that depend on the revenues from a drug war are still in place. So they still need property seizures. They still need incarcerations. Now, there's a prison industry in this country, and they need more people in prison.
And no doubt, some of the elite businesses do rely on suffering for the revenue.
Mm-hmm.
And people in poverty, whether it's the rural communities abandoned by businesses a decade ago or the inner cities that have been suffering for decades, you know, poverty and lack of hope does lead to drugs.
Mm-hmm.
And
prohibitions lead to making anything more dangerous. And you have a prohibition for abortion, for example. You have women dying of bleeding to death and horrible things with coat hangers. And you have a prohibition against cannabis. And you have Paraquat being sprayed on plants and kids getting sick. And, you know, what I really often think about is, you know, for all these decades that cannabis has been illegal, that people with chronic conditions that whose lives could have been saved through having it. Where's the accountability? Where's the reparations to those families?
Exactly. And one, you know, takeaway from this interview I hope to leave, Heather, with you and your audience,
mm-hmm.
is that I've been involved with so many different health groups, and it seems to me that we've been very effectively divided and conquered.
Yeah.
And so when I speak with, when I work with informed consent activists, I say, get involved with other health freedom groups. Be
mm-hmm.
nice to them, see the bigger picture, and they'll help you, educate them. A lot of medical marijuana activists don't know squat about the pain issue in opioids, because
mm-hmm.
and vice versa. Or even with the primary care doctors that are setting up DPC clinics, where potentially you could get better pain relief once they kick third-party insurance out of their doors. Or even insurance alternatives. You know, I call this the Atlas Shrugged option. There's one thing to lobby and coalesce with other groups. But also you need to look for big companies that get you out of the insurance model, get you out of big pharma's control or government's control. So I'm involved in all these new approaches
mm-hmm.
that have resulted from the frustration of beating your head against a wall with the lobbying part when you wonder, you know, Siobhan did such a great job and she suffered when that federal prosecutor in Kansas prosecuted her for trying to get witnesses to get involved with this Kansas doctor's mm-hmm. prosecution. And, you know, that federal prosecutor bankrupted her. She had to close down the pain relief organization. And, of course, you mentioned, unfortunately, a year or so later, she had that tragic airplane accident and perished.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, a lot of a lot of leaders have passed away in this movement, whether they're doctors or activists, or and some are still around, and we just have to be smart about how we work with other non-pain groups to educate them on our needs. We have to take the Atlas Shrugged approach and build new models of payment to get a better healthcare system, and also join groups like yours to do the straight-on lobbying on the pain issue itself.
I think Siobhan came to a similar conclusion that I did, because from what I followed of her speaking and writing, she went from looking at the chronic pain issue to, like we're talking about now, this greater issue. You know, because it really comes down to people having a right to make critical choices about their own body. So the chronic pain issue is really the same as the right to abortion issue, the right to refuse vaccines issue, the right to have any kind of authority over the human body.
Exactly. And, you know, I just posted a video from Milton Friedman at my Facebook page. He was speaking to a bunch of established doctors. It must have been 30 years ago. And the doctors were wide-eyed going, what? You want us to smother the FDA? Because on the one hand, it doesn't stop dangerous drugs from the market. On the other hand, it keeps promising drugs from the market. Mm-hmm. And by the way, it goes after natural competitors.
Yeah.
And then you want us to get rid of licensing? What about quacks? And he was explaining, you know, the only thing licensing does is it sets up cartels of doctors, and it keeps patients from accessing more innovative doctoring. These are the other issues that aren't directly in the pain field that folks need to consider. What is the role of not just the DEA, but the FDA or the CDC? Mm-hmm. Can we ever trust these government bodies? I mean, no. Or what about licensing? That doesn't seem like an issue that's important offhand. Well, it is.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we with some other friends, I'm trying to allow entrepreneurs to offer any good or service if they're certified voluntarily.
You know,
escape licensing. And that can help with healthcare.
When you mention licensing, just one idea I just sort of had in a kind of brainstorming way as something that we might be able to work towards as an interim step to opening up pharmaceuticals to being available to the people who need them, is some sort of protocol where a person, any person, regardless of their professional background, can do sort of like a similar thing to the civil service test. Like they can go and do a test about a certain substance, like say morphine. If they can show that they have proficient knowledge about this drug, then they should have clearance to go to a pharmacy and buy it straight up without a doctor's prescription.
That's a great idea. And how that would work in this big and growing licensing privatization movement is that if you are a pain doctor and you're tired of the hassles from being a licensed doctor, we have to follow the pharma protocols to avoid being delicensed by your board, or to get your DEA license to offer controlled substances.
Right, that's the gun held to their head right now.
Exactly. You would offer to the market your certification as a high-level pain doctor, and you wouldn't have to get licensed in that respect. And the only job of the bureaucrat in the state would be to prosecute fraudulent players lying about being certified in your certification organization.
Instead, what they're doing is actually tallying up how many milligrams are prescribed by, say, a doctor or a pharmacy, and then just going after them to prosecute.
Exactly. And doctors are saying, forget this. You know, I don't care how much pain you're in, patient A. I'm not going to raise any red flags with the DEA.
Yep.
They're going to nail me as a kingpin. That's what they're using to put these. I've seen eminent physicians sentenced to decades in prison in federal court. Hurwitz, Google that name, H-U-R-W-I-T-Z. That's so pathetic.
Yeah.
I think it was appealed successfully somehow, but the doctor still had to plead something, and he got 5 years.
I have to jump in here and let our listeners know that you are listening to WGXC Acra Hudson Catskill 90.7 FM. You're listening to the Medical Freedom Show with your host, Heather Martin. We are a live call-in show, so if you have a question for myself or our guest, Charles D. Frohman, our phone number here is 518-828-0290. Again, that number is 518-828-0290. I'm talking today with Charles D. Frohman, activist, lobbyist, congressional staffer, and libertarian, about his work in the activist community and working with Siobhan Reynolds, who is a foremost activist for chronic pain patients. She founded the Chronic Pain Network. Am I saying it right?
Pain Relief Organization.
Pain Relief Network, right?
A Pain Relief Organization, PRO.
Yeah, the Pain Relief Organization. I think she did have several. She died in a tragic plane accident in 2011, an accident that I myself find a bit suspicious.
Yeah, I mean,
there's been so many activists who just mysteriously go down in a private plane that was in perfect condition and being expertly piloted by somebody close to her who also died.
Yeah, in her case, her boyfriend, Kip Byer, is a lawyer who defended pain doctors. So, yeah, it's suspicious, but you can't help but be suspicious because so many, well, a lot of natural doctors, too, who threaten big pharma's control. So whether it's natural innovators or activists that really make headway with an issue that threatens the powers that be, you can't help but be suspicious when so many in a cohort of type of people pass away. Going, you know, what's in the water here? This is strange.
Yeah. Well, I hope that I can become dangerous enough to the prohibitions that be to be a target one day. Hopefully, one that survives.
Yeah. Exactly.
But yeah, it is really suspicious how anyone who really gains some traction in this issue seems to be brought down in an untimely way, and how we just lost Dr. Myers. Of course, that was a health complication, but you know, it always makes you wonder. There's so many forces out there that are financially interested in keeping the prohibitions going. The prohibitions are wonderful for criminals.
Well, not just prohibitions, but the protocols, dominated by Medicare and taken up by insurance for how doctors operate. So it's just basically an allopathic model, and folks want more of an all-of-the-above strategy. And you know, you mentioned that I'm an activist. Well, I'm actually an entrepreneur. And I'm involved with some folks that may get us some negative attention from the powers that be. We're actually offering the Uber for the health cartel.
Right. You told me about that.
That's the Atlas Shrugged recommendation I share, in addition to the activism that I recommend and the coalition building.
And you're right. It takes creative problem solving, creative solution finding, creating new alternatives to old paradigms. Our insurance insurance situation is obviously beyond broken. When you have insurance companies making medical decisions that can cost someone their lives, we've really got a serious imbalance.
Exactly. And one of my best sources for this issue, going back to the 2000s, is Jacob Solomon at Reason.com, a name that should be familiar with your pain medicine audience. Yeah, a lot of folks consider him the scribe on this issue for decades. And I just read in one of his recent articles that insurance companies now are cutting back on reimbursement for opioids. And that just gives another reason for folks to really explore insurance alternatives out there, like sharing.
Unfortunately, though, in our current situation, so many people who are chronically ill have been so financially decimated that even with these great options, it's not something that they can take part of. They're really now completely dependent on the government systems, and we really need some stepping stone efforts to move people out of that.
Well, of course, and you want to have a strong Medicaid system for those who just can't afford either private insurance or the new sharing alternatives, which are kind of like credit unions to banks. You know, a lot of folks have left banks for credit unions.
Right.
And that competition will drive down prices so that more folks who otherwise would only have Medicaid as an option could maybe re-enter the market as these outrageous premiums go down. And then, you know, as far as Medicaid goes, or even Medicare or the VA, you know, activism is needed there too, because any system that's big is going to be dominated by big pharma and other wealthy donors to politicians. It's never going to be you or me that makes the final decision once offered. So people in Medicaid, you know, you want to make sure you keep an eye on those systems, or the VA, to allow innovators to upgrade those systems for people.
I often mention on the show Dr. Benjamin Rush. He was one of the founding fathers, a signer of the Declaration of Independence. And early in this country's history, he was urging for another provision similar to the religious freedom provision to be written into our Constitution or Bill of Rights to protect medical freedom. And his argument was that if it wasn't done, we would see medicine fall into a certain class. It would be restricted. It would be restricted by class. And he saw this as a coming medical tyranny.
Well, there are two things there, class and tyranny. They're related, but a little different. You know, whether it's, well, the pain issue and the informed consent issue, well, there's even other ways that tyranny is already manifesting. And
oh, it's definitely manifested. And I'm glad that you mentioned consent. You know, we hear a lot about consent when it comes to like interpersonal conduct between men and women, but what about when a person's in a doctor's office and they're having their body violated? They're saying, no, I don't want that epidural steroid injection. I need opiates to kill the pain. And they're forcing that person to take the epidural steroid injection and risk further injury. It's you know, it's no different than any kind of physical violation.
Or vaccines.
Yeah.
You know, I think these are both blatant examples of the tyranny that you're right is already here. I mean,
for at least 200 years now.
It has.
It's hard for people to even understand medical freedom, because it's a right they don't have. It's a right that no one living has grown up with. And it's kind of an alien concept. But yeah, you should have the right to go to a doctor and say, this is the medicine that works for me. And for that doctor to have to say, okay, well, you refuse the NSAIDs, you refuse the epidurals, we're going to go with the opiates.
Right. And, you know, there's the tyranny of the crowd, too. You know, if you ask questions about vaccines, you're hounded by polite company. Mm-hmm. If you are a lawyer with a bad back who needs opioids, Vicodin, Percocet for months and years, just because your body just is not releasing endorphins to control the pain, you're an outlier if your neighborhood finds out that you're a long-term opioid user. So that's on purpose too. You know, the pharma-controlled media wants to get a message out there, and the media does rely for 70% of its revenue on pharmaceutical advertising buys. So the fact that the media stories on pain medicine are so distorted, and, you know, they're mixing drug addict issues with legitimate pain patient issues, for example, or they never talk about the billions of dollars paid for vaccine injuries, you know, they have achieved successfully the thought they want people to have out there.
Right.
That make it difficult for activists like ourselves who are trying to help pain patients, who are trying to let mothers judge how they protect their kids,
you know what,
from diseases.
I have a cue, a quote from Siobhan on this, actually, queued up right now about people and the propaganda. So I'm going to play a quote from her. Since we've been talking about her, I think it's nice to share her actual voice and memory here. This is from a YouTube video. It's not my content. I'm just using it here for educational purposes. It's from a YouTube channel, Alex DeLuca. The video is, he said, I'm not a good deal. 3 of 3, Siobhan Reynolds. So I'm going to just play this quote from her for a moment.
I actually am sympathetic to people who don't get it and who don't do anything about it if they do get it, because I was one of them for 10 years. It's a hard thing to get your mind around. It's a hard thing to believe that there are literally millions of Americans living in suicidal levels of pain who are being abused by the medical profession. That's a pretty hard thing to take in. But that's what's going on. These people have become such an abstraction, you know, to the media, to the courts, to the Congress. I mean, these people do not exist. You got to understand that. You know, when we started, as I say, all there were everybody was, the assumption was everybody got their pain treated, and all the problem was drug dealing doctors, you know, and not enough law enforcement. That was the way it was perceived. And the truth of it was that hidden behind that lie was millions and millions of seriously ill people who are, just know that their life's draining away from them moment by moment. It's a blessing that this happened, that this issue came to light, that this is something that the country's going to have to grapple with for the next few years, because we're going to define ourselves again, I think, as people, and whether or not we're people who care about each other. I think it matters whether or not Americans care about each other. Right now, the evidence is not good. The law and the way it's enforced and all the different pressures that are on medicine and all this propaganda we've heard about addiction, put it all together. And what you have is a situation where people feel that they must brutalize people in pain. It's just the only right thing to do. You know, it blows my mind, but that's really what you find. If you go to addiction treatment programs, you go to drug court, they take people off pain medicine who are in pain because they've been determined to be an addict. And the people who do that think they're doing a good thing.
So that was Siobhan Reynolds talking about how the perception is that people in pain are just going to their doctors, getting treatment, and that's not the reality of it. The reality of the situation is we've got huge numbers of people suffering chronic illness and debating every day, do I go out on the street, get heroin? I don't know if it's clean heroin. I don't know exactly how much I'm getting. Don't have a doctor to show me how to use it. Or maybe I should commit suicide. And that, unfortunately, is the reality for our chronic pain patients. It's what they're left in.
Yeah, thank you for playing that. And you mentioned Alex DeLuca. He was another doctor drummed out of work because of his good work helping pain patients. And he would accompany Siobhan and me on some of these meetings to Capitol Hill. So he was fantastic, and mm-hmm. I haven't heard from him in years, so I assume he's still doing good work. He would do the, when I was working with him, research to find the studies that mm-hmm. would back our claim that addiction is overblown with the pain market. Mm-hmm. And here's the evidence, and there are some good studies out there undercutting the claim by the powers that be that we'd have a real addiction problem here. We always counter the real problem is the underprescribing of pain medicine, especially opioids. And I think that continues to be factual. And, you know, you mentioned the affordability issue just recently. You know, there's some new shoppers for drugs out there that deliver to one's door overseas versions of the active ingredients. And as those market innovations proliferate, that's going to deal with some of the unaffordability issues that patients face. Because when you're getting prescribed weeks and months and years of opioids or other pain medicine, that could really take a hit on your budget.
Yeah. However, getting something like that also puts the patient into a scary situation because, you know, that could be considered illegal to be buying opiates mail order from another country. So that then could put that patient in a position of being afraid of being arrested, being prosecuted. I agree about civil disobedience being it's always an important factor in any protests and any real change being made, but certainly has to be done with the utmost care. And people, you know, do have to worry about their own safety.
Right. And with the drug shopper I'm thinking of, it is prescribed, so it's legal.
Mm-hmm.
And it works with pharmacies overseas. So, yeah, they're trying to address those concerns that mm-hmm. you properly say about legality.
Charles,
and whatnot.
If I would appreciate it very much if you have links to this type of information. There is a Facebook page for the Medical Freedom Show. It's just called Medical Freedom. It has an icon with a pink opium poppy flower. And therein are listed all of the archives to my show. I also invite guests who have been on my show to share their information there so it can become more of an information resource for people who want to become part of the effort towards medical freedom. So I'd really appreciate it if you would, when you get a chance after the show, post a link to that on that site so that our listeners could check out that resource. It's very interesting.
And I will do so.
And also for the insurance co-op.
I will do that. And what I'll post there is basically my site that has my phone number and email in case folks want to reach me with questions. It's charles.mympb.com. M as in Mary, Y as in yo-yo, M as in Mary, P as in Paul, B as in boy. So that's how folks can get my email.
Okay, I was just trying to write that down and I couldn't. So I'm sure our listeners in their cars or at work probably couldn't too. But we will get that posted up on the Facebook page for Medical Freedom so that our listeners can go and check it out there.
Yes. Yeah, thank you for that, Heather.
I also want to talk a little bit about the fight for medical freedom and for chronic pain patients is far from over. We're really in the midst of it right now. There are some rallies going on, Don't Punish Pain. There is the rallies being organized right now. There is, of course, the National Pain Patients Advocacy Week. That is the last week in April. And my partner and I do intend to make an appearance up in Albany then. A couple years ago, we also did the local hospital and the governor's office area up in Albany. So if any listeners are interested in being part of that, again, there's information on the Medical Freedom page. On Facebook.
Heather, that event's in April in Albany for pain patient rights.
Mm-hmm.
Is that, you know, the kind of event where some in your group might consider reaching out to non-pain health freedom activists to get them to come and help out?
Absolutely.
That?
See, this is why I started out with the chronic pain issue, but I quickly saw how it's a broader issue. It's really about how disempowered people are when they go into a doctor's office because all of the pharmaceutical medicines are under prohibition. I mean, let's say everything is under prohibition. If you cannot go to a drugstore and buy it without a doctor's prescription, it's under prohibition. So everything is from the insulin that a diabetic needs to birth control, certain types of birth control. There are all these restrictions, and the restrictions always, You know, it's human nature to get high. You know, human beings are not going to ever stop creating and taking recreational substances to open their consciousness. It's just a factor of human nature. People have been doing it for all of recorded history, as far back as we can look, even to the oral histories of traditional society. So it's not going to change. Legislation, even if we ban all of the substances, all that's going to happen is creative chemists are going to come up with new things like the flaca drugs, like the bath salts. They're just going to keep creating more and more unnatural, dangerous substances, and there's going to be a demand for it because people want to get high.
Right, and they want medicines to help them cope
with
the stresses of life. And mm-hmm. Exactly.
I do want to talk a bit about the addiction issue. There have been several so-called opioid deaths in our area. But I want to just say that for a person who's using opioids without a doctor, they're taking on a lot of risk. When you're buying a substance in the black market, you don't know what chemicals have been added into it. You don't know what process it's gone through for manufacturer. You don't know if it's who made it or how good it is or really how much you're getting. And if people had legal access to drugs, most of them would probably just smoke opium and not even touch a heroin syringe. But since you can't get opium anymore, you've got more people using heroin or imitation heroin. In fact, most of what people are dying of right now is poorly imitated heroin.
Fentanyl, exactly.
It's not fentanyl, because fentanyl is a medicine. Some people use it with great success, but what's coming through is actually called carfentanil, and that's part of the misperception. Now, people are thinking, well, fentanyl is so bad. Oh my gosh, everyone's dying from fentanyl. No, medical-grade fentanyl, used properly, is a pain reliever like anything else. I know some people who say that fentanyl has saved their lives. It's the only drug that treats their pain. For my partner, not so much. It wasn't such a great medicine for him. But that's, again, the thing, that for each medicine, there's someone to whom it's a miracle, and there's someone to whom it's almost poison.
Yeah, that's what Jacob Solomon was writing, that carfentanil and all these other something-fentanyl, all these synthetic...
Mm-hmm. It's not really fentanyl. It might be made from gasoline and battery acid, okay? It didn't come from a poppy plant.
But so thanks for that clarification. And the other thing I kind of wanted to add was, I mentioned coalescing with non-pain activists and health freedom to mm-hmm. get them to help us with our issue. Also, doctors. You know, there are some great private pain doctors over the last couple of decades that you've experienced with your husband. Mm-hmm. But there's also a lot of more mainstream doctors who just believe the propaganda taught to them.
Yeah, who just want to keep their license and want to not rock any boats and not treat pain.
Or they believe the propaganda that you know, opioids mm-hmm. are bad. So, you know, part of the revolution in the marketplace with healthcare isn't just getting folks off of insurance or into these, you know, sharing co-ops, but also making patients into cash payers. There's a lot of doctors out there that are suffering.
Of course, first the patients need the cash.
Well, some of these companies provide the cash, you know, through health savings accounts mm-hmm. or through the sharing itself. But the point is that the cash making is the making of the patient into a cash payer. The point is that it frees the doctor to innovate, and you become less susceptible to the bonuses paid by pharma for, you know, vaccine pressure or mm-hmm. You know, or other pharma pressure. Or insurance pressure, so that they can return to practicing being a doctor. They can become more open-minded, whether on opioid therapy or natural therapy. And, you know, just that return of time to the patient. Mm-hmm. I think so many good things will happen on the macro level with health freedom if we engage the doctors with our cause. And that can happen indirectly by the making of patients into cash payers.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, a lot of us are thinking big picture. How do we build our coalitions through straight advocacy, through coalition building, or through the entrepreneurial disruptors that I'm involved with? So it's an all of the above strategy that some of us are taking.
Yeah.
Because things are getting worse. They've gotten worse.
They sure
since
are.
I was working with Siobhan Reynolds. Opioid prescribing is down, but addiction deaths are up.
Yeah, and all we keep hearing is about more cuts being made, more bills going through to restrict pharmaceutical companies from even making enough opioids to treat the population.
Right.
And, you know, you can't help but see it as... following the footsteps of a genocide, you know, in Nazi Germany. Before the Holocaust, there was the sterilization of people in hospitals, in institutions. Some people were outright killed. So, you know, traditionally these so-called population cleansings start this way. And seems a lot like that's what we're dealing with right now.
I think you're right. I mean, let's look at the rates of chronic disease that are up. There are still studies that show babies born now aren't going to live as long as their parents.
And the neurological damage happening to children mysteriously escalating.
Yeah, mysteriously escalating. Yeah, I think some of us have some ideas, but you know, the media won't cover them because of who funds their advertising budgets.
Yeah.
But, that's why we have to look at the big picture, coalesce with non-pain groups, doctors who sometimes are our adversaries.
That's what I want to do, is bring everybody together, like those of you who want vaccine choice, be part of medical freedom. Those of you who want the choice to have an abortion or not, you're part of medical freedom. If you're
Health is a big one.
Yeah, if you're in natural health and you want to choose an alternative treatment for yourself or your family, you're a part of medical freedom. This is an issue for everyone. Charles, we're down to the last 2.5 minutes of our show. I just want to give you that heads up, unless there's anything pressing and last minute you'd like to share with our listening audience.
Thank you, Heather, for this opportunity to return to an important part of my life, which was the late 2000s cooperation with a great activist named Siobhan Reynolds.
And for our listeners, that's SIOBHANREYNOLDS. So Siobhan, spelled like SIOBHAN.
And at your Facebook page, in preparation for this interview, I did post Jacob Sullum's article after Siobhan's passing, so you could read her whole story right there. And the writer includes great links to the issue, and it's 10 years old. And you'll see, if you're following the issue now, that not much has changed, except it's got worse.
Yeah.
So, you know, I think our backs are up against the wall. You know, there's a bit of a Trump in this conversation, too, the deplorables. Voted him in. People are angry. They want him to go after the deep state. I think folks are opening their eyes. They're asking questions. They want more control. They don't trust elite institutions or the mainstream. And that, to me, is a good thing. That's what we need. We need everyone that's a bit skeptical about what's going on to coalesce.
Yeah, people are starting to get awakened and critical of the government. And my reaction's like, oh, well, welcome. How you feel now, that's how I felt back in the Obama years, because this is really where it started for us. It was back in 2012, 2013 is when the pain medicine went away.
Not just government, but the crony corporations that collude with government to help themselves and hurt opponents. So it's that government corporate complex is what I call it. And it's in every market, not just health.
We're almost out of time. So thank you so much, Charles Frohman,
you,
for being on the show and for sharing your experience. Hope we can get more lobbyists like you for chronic pain.
That would be great. I